Well, thank you, Inez, for that really lovely introduction. And I feel that I'm here primarily as a parent who sings. That's kind of what it boils down to. And most of what I hope to do tonight is to just share some of my experience and my journey as a parent through songs that I've written on that journey. And there are teachings that kind of weave through all that, and we'll probably be talking, do some talking as well. And I wanted to just ask you a few questions before we start. One is, how many of you are actively parenting right now as we speak? Good. And you have good babysitters or partners or something going on for you. And how many of you are primarily involved with children under, say, 5? Okay. And how about like 5 to 11 or so? Ah, yes. And 12 up? Great. Okay, so we got a really good spread of parent and grandparent experience. How many of you are grandparents? Okay. Great. Well, good. I hope that what I share tonight will kind of somehow speak to the universals among our diversity here. And how many of you are new to coming to this Dharma Center? Okay. So you heard about it through other sources. The newspaper, maybe? Newspaper? Word of mouth?
On the web.
On the web? Okay. Great. Okay. Well, it is such a rare opportunity for parents to get a night out, and I appreciate you choosing this over the movies, dinner out, or just going to bed early. So, given that you have this precious time, I think it would be wonderful if we just took a few minutes to sit together, calm ourselves, relax our bodies, and just kind of come home. And I'll talk us through a little bit of a process to just kind of help us all go where we're going here. And just for a few moments, and then we'll begin. So just find a way to feel very comfortable sitting. And just notice that your body is resting on something, a cushion or a chair, the earth. And breathe into that place where you are making contact with something that is supporting you. Really feel that sense of being held. That you are supported, your body, your spine, your spirit, all resting right where you are. And let your breath just gently rise and fall in and out. That's all we're going to do right now, is just let our breath come in and out. And let your mind rest with your breath. Letting your belly soften, relaxing your leg muscles. Letting your jaw become soft and relaxed. Your eyelids soften, and your forehead unfurl. Sometimes it actually helps the face relax a bit if you let a very soft half smile form on the corners of your lips. Just very gentle. And just enjoy for this moment the feeling of space within you as you breathe, the silence surrounding you, and a little sense of space around your body, like a little aura of calm, peace. At this moment, no one is asking you for anything or clinging to you, needing anything. For just this moment, here you are, at home, in your own precious body. And as the tensions and busynesses of the day sort of maybe still buzz a little bit inside, just allow your out-breath to release any tensions that you're carrying, any worries. Just letting go. May have felt like the first quiet moment you've had in a while. For those of you that aren't regular people at this center. There's many other things that go on here that allow for these moments of peace and quiet, and maybe you'll find your way back at another time for another kind of sitting. So I'm going to move over to this chair now because I can sing a little better when I'm sitting up a little straighter. Just to tell you a brief bit about myself, just to kind of get acquainted, and then start right in with music. I am the mother of a 13 and a half year old boy, and am living to tell the tale. And I encountered my first contact with Buddhist practice was through Thich Nhat Hanh in 1987. Thich Nhat Hanh is a Buddhist Vietnamese teacher, monk, peace leader, and began writing songs. I've been writing songs since I was a little girl, but I began writing songs inspired by his Dharma teachings and his poetry. And then as this child came into my life, a long-awaited, much-wanted child at the age of 41, a whole new set of music began to pour out. And I became involved with the family program at Spirit Rock about 10 or 11 years ago when it started, and have been singing in that program for the children, for the families, and have done every summer an adult parent Dharma talk such as we're going to do tonight. So Gil heard me do this talk last summer and asked me to come down and share some of what I had done with you. So that's me. So I want to start with a song by Sweet Honey in the Rock that I feel really captures so much about this journey that we're on as parents, grandparents, lovers of children. And it's from the words by Khalil Gibran on children. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Oh, our children are not our children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through us, but they are not from us. And though they are with us, they belong not to us. We can give them our love, but not our thoughts, 'cause they have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts.
He's 13, I know all about this.
We can house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which we cannot visit, not even in our dreams. We can strive to be like them, but we cannot make them just like us. Strive to be like them, but we cannot make them just like us.
Thank you. We could probably turn the volume down a little bit, I think. Yeah. It's no applause is necessary. A bow of appreciation to each other is so sweet, especially for me as a performer who sang for so many years in the folk world and whatever, and it was hard to find a way to acknowledge that we together had experienced something. You know, applause is always coming at the person who's the visible leader. But I like the bowing. It's a circle of honoring what each of us has just experienced. So thank you for that. So, what a song, you know. That mystery about parenting to me, that our children are leaving us from the moment they're conceived, practically, and certainly from the moment of birth. They are on their way into their own life, and we're the gateway, and then we're the container, and then we're the whatever, the roots. We're the roots. And in order for love to happen and for children to survive, we have to attach with them. We have to bond with them deeply, knowing that they're going to be gone. And that, to me, is such a dance in parenting, of allowing my heart to open enough to really connect and attach and love this child with all my heart, and also be always watching him move away from me. It's just, I mean, this is something, I mean, parents to me are the real yogis of the world. People sit on cushions for years trying to get this kind of experience with, you know, the mystery, the kind of the tension between, here I am, I'm in this body, I want to eat, I want to sleep, I want to have sex, I want, you know, I want, I'm attached to all these things, I need to be attached to them in a certain way, and yet to also feel so spacious, so empty, so kind of like it all is flowing through, but I don't have to attach to any of it. Joy comes and disappears, sorrow comes and disappears, and I'm a sort of a stream, all ever changing. So that solidity and that spacious streaming is a great deep practice in the Buddhist path. And here you are as parents, you're getting it. You know, you may not realize it, but you have been doing this dance from the get-go. So, I have learned many lessons in attachment from my son. And the first one, really, that he taught me, or when I got to see how that human desire to grasp after something and hold on to something that's fleeting and going by, I saw in him when he was about a year and a half. Now, before about a year and a half, for any of you who have remember this, when they're really little, you can pretty much take them, children, anywhere, like let's say to the supermarket or to a toy store, and they will roll down the aisle with you and just look at everything. And they have those beginner's eyes that are just like, oh, oh, oh. And they're just drinking everything in this very open way. And I remember the time when I was going down an aisle with him and all of a sudden his hand went out. And he wanted to grab something. And it kind of pained my heart because I thought, okay, those days are over, you know. That kind of wide open, I don't want anything, I'm just enjoying all this, you know, changed into, can I have it? So this led me to create a song called Can I Have It? For any of you that are musicians, I have to just say that I left my good capo elsewhere, so this is a capo, and it's a, we hope it will work. Matthew wants a choo-choo, Matthew wants a ball, and Matthew wants to stay up late and watch the stars that fall. Matthew wants a story, Matthew wants a song, and I would give him anything I didn't think was wrong. But we're driving down the highway on a silver summer morn. Matthew wants the car keys, Matthew wants the horn. So I'm trying to change the subject, and I point up to the sky, where the clouds are dancing in the wind. And he holds his hand up high. He says, have it. Can I have it? Can you bring them down, down to the ground? Can I have it? Now Matthew chases butterflies. He tries to taste the snow. Wants to catch the bubbles, all those big ones that I blow.
those floating, glowing rainbows just beyond his hand. And when he finally touches one, he doesn't understand. He says, "Have it. Why can't I have it? Oh, it runs away when I want to play. Can't I have it?" Would that I could bring down the sky for you, answer every why for you, catch the wings that fly away from you. But there's things that come to visit that are not meant to stay. Things that you reach out for that may never come your way. And things that bloom with magic but fade beneath your touch. And things that even hurt you, though you want them oh so much. You can't have them. No, 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 you can't have them. Chair tonight, sing the song of twinkling stars that give the dark their light. And I think of how I wanted you and I waited for so long, and all the prayers I whispered and the stars I wished upon, saying, "Have it, why can't I have it?" Visit that are not meant to stay. Your sleepy head upon my breast, the magic of today. And I'm lucky just to hold you, my little flake of snow. I hope my hands will open when it's time to let you go, and I can love you, just love you, as I watch you fly toward an unknown sky. I can love you. As you fly away, from my open hand, fly away.
In a few more songs, I'm going to actually create some space for you all to talk to each other a little bit. It's another very precious moment that we don't get enough of, is time to talk to other parents from a kind of mindful, deeper place. Most of my interactions with other parents as my child has been growing up have been very on the fly, you know. You're always running after a little one, you know, in the middle of your conversation. Or as they get older, you're just dropping them off at someone's house or at soccer, whatever it is. And I know lots of parents, and I'm very grateful for them, but the times of really deep conversation are few and far between. So I know that these kinds of songs definitely can tap into a lot of places, and I want to give you a chance to share with each other a bit. But I do want to go a little bit further with this theme of attaching and letting go. And there's another thing that I was interested to find that I got very attached to, was I got attached to my image of myself as a mother. Now, how many of you are what I would call late life mothers or fathers? Kind of started a little further on. Yeah, this is the Bay Area. We do that. So I went through many years of trying and infertility and so forth, like a lot of women of my generation, and finally gave birth at 41. And so during the time I was building up to this, I read tons of books. I went to lots of parenting meetings, even, and you know, parenting education things before I was even pregnant. I wanted to be very prepared. And so my feeling about having a child was that people would, you know, would see me pregnant, they'd say it, they were parents, and they'd say, oh boy, are you in for it? It's sleep now, you aren't going to sleep for the next 18 years, and you know, oh boy, watch out. And I think, not me, you know, I am prepared, you know, prepared. And also, I had suffered. I mean, infertility is, there's a lot of suffering in not being able to get what you want, you know. That Buddha, in fact, the Buddha says that is really the root of our suffering, is that it, to live is to have, you know, desires and cravings. It's just part of being human. And getting attached to getting those things is what causes the suffering. It's actually not the desire that causes the suffering, it's attaching to it, having it be a have to instead of a wouldn't it be nice. Well, this mother had to have a child. I mean, I was not loose about it. I could not let go. Very embarrassing to a Buddhist, very humbling. So I want to sing you a song about expectations of mothering, because I think it's a pretty funny subject, actually. This is called The Mother That I'm Going to Be. And there are two parts. And the first part is the things I will never do. Because you know what an expert you are on parenting before you have one? You know how you watch other parents in the supermarket being horrible and say, oh my God, you know. I certainly never do that, and I probably should tell them how to do it better, because they're just totally out of it. So the first verse is things I will never do. And the second part is my vision of myself. So you may identify with bits and pieces of this. With apologies to Rodgers and Hammerstein. Yell at my children and curse in their presence. Threaten to leave before their adolescence. Act like I'm sure when I haven't a clue. These are the things that I never will do. Run lots of errands while they're in the back seat. Let them eat sugar and ice cream and red meat. Turn on the TV and nap while they view. These are the things that I never will do. Say, see, I told you so, that's what you get. Make them a promise and promptly forget. When I'm running late, say it's all 'cause of you. These are the things that I never will do. Shake my finger, shame and blame them in front of their friends. There's so many sins other parents commit. I'm glad that I'm not like them. Part two. Radiant love that surrounds like a halo. Long afternoons making brownies and Play-Doh. Sweet soothing music to help you to sleep. This is the mother that I'm going to be. Ringing a mindfulness bell at the table. Savoring each bite as long as we're able. Deep contemplations of bugs, twigs and leaves. This is the mother that I'm going to be. Sacred community gathering often. Breathing and smiling and learning to soften. Living the precepts so naturally. This is the mother that I'm going to be. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when you scrape your knee, I'll simply be breathing and present and clear, 'cause that's how I'm going to be.
It's okay to clap.
So, any of that sound familiar? And those, if any of you are, well, no, I guess most of you are already involved with children. But I bet if any of you were pregnant for the first time, you'd probably secretly still be thinking, not me, you know. So, in terms of parenting and surviving, and not only surviving, but thriving, and not even thriving, but having joy, one of the key practices I think we can all do as much as we can remember is to really watch our expectations. Watch our expectations in the sense of, when I find myself irrationally angry with my child, it's often rooted in an anger at myself because I'm not able to handle the situation that's going on. I don't seem to have the resources in that moment to be the parent that I want to be. And so naturally I lash out at him, you know, because he's making me a bad parent. It's perfectly obvious. And if I'm more accepting of the fact that to be a good parent is not the same as being a perfect parent, and that I often don't know what to do, and that I could even maybe admit that to myself or to my child, like, honey, you know, I don't know what to do in this situation. You know, what do you think we should do? You know, that anything that can kind of free us a bit from the role of having to know, having to be right, having to kind of take on an authority that we may not feel, because that's what parents are supposed to do, that the beauty of letting some of that go is that what we gain is an intimacy with our children. We gain an intimacy as we allow ourselves to be real human foibled people. And I think what I want to do is actually just leave it at that and do this one more song, because then this will be a good springboard for you all talking together a little bit. The other expectation that I had that got me in a lot of trouble was that I thought I would get the child that I expected. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it, but I really did have an image. And it wasn't a physical at all. And it wasn't, how can I say it? I just assumed that my child would be sort of like me in my best moments, you know? So of course it would be a girl, you know? And as she grew up, she'd be a little baby feminist, just, you know, like me. And she'd want to play football like I did when I was a girl. And whatever, you know, that somehow I would just make this big imprint on her. And of course, because I would have all these great mothering skills, because I had read every book on the shelf from the library about mothering while I was waiting to get pregnant, that, I don't know, I just had this expectation that I would handle it really well. And also, because of the suffering involved in waiting so long, I thought the universe owed me. You know, the universe owed me, and that I should really get something easy. So I didn't. I got a very challenging child who had colic for 5 months straight and became the terror of his preschool and was just not the child I expected. So I had to do a lot of growing and letting go. And this song came out of reading a wonderful book called Raising Your Spirited Child. Some of you may know that book. If you don't, you might want to check it out, by Mary Sheedy Krichinka, Raising Your Spirited Child. And out of that book and out of my son came this song about three children. And my son is actually all of these three children, so this will give you a real portrait of him. I'm still back on Can I Have It? Molly's too busy to speak when she's spoken to. Sometimes you think that she's deaf and try to get her to move.
You got a fight on your hands. She's little but stubborn and tough. Some days she gets moving just a little too fast. She bumps and she bruises herself. And some days her wires just get humming until she can't possibly choose to sit still. And you can call her a problem, call it disease, prescribe medication, but it's so hard to see that maybe there's nothing so wrong. Who sets the clock and says what time we're on? 'Cause every heart beats to a rhythm that's secret and wild. Oh, we just have to listen more closely to the spirited child. Now Marcos is picky. He spits out his food, and his socks must have seams just like razors. So he has to go barefoot, wear his shirts inside out. You can forget about bow ties and blazers. Some kids like to listen to their folks rock and roll, but Marcos just covers his ears. Oh, the jangle and the bustle of life as we know it can drive kids like Marcos to tears. And we can say he's too sensitive. What's all the fuss? It's best not to spoil him. He's got to adjust, but maybe there's nothing so wrong. Who sets the clock and says what time we're on? 'Cause every heart beats to a rhythm that's secret and wild. Oh, we just have to move a bit slower with the spirited child. Micah gets so excited, he can't wait a minute. He has to be first every time. First to get popsicles, first. I can't remember the words for this part. Do you notice how, as a parent, that your mind is not what it used to be? First something something, first to get popsicles, first batter up, first in line. And maybe he's trouble and he's hard on the group. He'll strike out if he don't get his way. The others have learned about please, yes and thank you, but no is still mostly what Michael will say. We can call him a bully, aggressive and mean, and these labels stick to him till it's all we can see. But maybe there's nothing so wrong. Who sets the clock and says what time we're on? 'Cause every heart beats to a rhythm that's secret and wild. We just have to move a bit closer to the spirited child. And maybe you can remember way back who set the clock and tried to keep you on track. And did your heart beat to a rhythm so secret and wild? You can feel it again when you dance with the spirited child.
it's a gift that we get just from loving that spirited child.
Whenever I have sung that, so many parents have come up to me and said, "That's my child. That's my child." To the point where I've come to realize that I think all children are spirited, and some are maybe a little more, you know. Mary Sheedy Kirchinka's definition of the spirited child is the child who's just a little more of, and then there's all these qualities, a little more sensitive, or a little more hard to transition, or a little more stubborn or willful. Everybody is, all children are, and then spirited children are just like on the outer edges of the polarity. And it's such a blessing, I think, to have that different way of framing it, that the child is not, you know, necessarily ADD or whatever. There's all the, you know, all the diagnoses that are floating around right now, maybe, but maybe not, you know, maybe there's nothing so wrong, except that this child has a temperament, has a way of being that is probably hardwired from the get-go, that puts that child out of sync with the sort of, either the norm, if there is such a thing, and again, I don't know how many children really fit the norm, honestly, but either they're just out of sync with the norm, or they're out of sync with the adult rhythm, whether it's school or home. And I think this is one of the really painful things about being a child, is that you are in a world, you have come into a world that is moving at an incredible pace, more so each day. And children are in this very amazing time space for quite a while, where they are is in the eternal moment. So each moment is an eternity. Each moment is huge and full. And they are totally present for it, totally present. And you know this because you've seen your children. There was a child today that came to a women's singing circle that I do in Palo Alto every now and then. And a woman brought her little baby who's 9 months, is it, Linda?
Yeah.
And that child got down on the floor in a crawl position, but she just sat there and looked at me with the biggest eyes and the most open face. There was no judgment. There was no worry. There was no approval. There was nothing except, you know, and a little delight, a little bit of delight around the lips. And it's staggering to be in the presence of that kind of presence. I mean, it's sort of, you know, it feels, it's very humbling. I'm remembering a friend of mine who had a baby years and years ago, and he would look into that baby's big eyes and he would just say, "I'm sorry, you know, that I can't be all that you think I am, you know, and all that you think, just all that I wish I could be." So I think that the greatest gift we can give ourselves and our children is to find practices that allow us to go where they are and not exert so much energy trying to bring them to where we are. Now, this is a dilemma because we know we have the clocks and we know when work starts and we know when school starts and we know a lot. We know way too much. A child doesn't know any of that, you know. And when I'm in a rush to get out the door and my child is inspecting the dust motes under the sofa, you know, he's totally engrossed, totally happy, and he has no idea that I am frantic, you know. And then I want him to put socks on, and then I want him to put shoes on. And I have a child who's extremely sensitive. We had to cut the toes out of his socks. We had to cut all the labels off his shirts. He went barefoot, essentially, for the first 6 or 7 years because he just couldn't tolerate shoes. Now, you know, when you're trying to jam shoes on a child like that, it's miserable. It's miserable. You know what I mean? Yeah? Any of you have children like this? Yeah. How many of you really related to something in the Spirited Child song? Really related to it with your child? Yeah, you see, look around. Just keep your hands up for a minute. Just look around. Yeah. So we're all dealing with this. And so I think that finding a practice that allows you to have some time to just sit and be quiet in yourself is a really wonderful place to start. On finding your own quiet, your own moment of space where you can just breathe and just feel your own body and your own energy and even your own thoughts as they go back and forth. You know, if you just sit there and be with them, they do begin to kind of slow down after a while. And practicing that with ourselves makes it a lot easier to then be with our children in the space that they already are in. I mean, they're just waiting for us to catch up, you know. And when we come to them in that space, I want to tell you, and you, if you've ever, I'm sure you have, had moments where you were just, for whatever reason, really present. You just were there. You weren't looking at your clock. You weren't, that little part of you wasn't like edging toward the door. You were just there. And in that moment, you may have noticed that your child got very happy. Your child got very alive. And children, I noticed my son, when I was able to be present with him, his whole personality changed. You know, and he, as I say, was a very difficult child, not a lot of fun to be around. And I learned some things, which I'll share with you in a bit, that helped me to really be with him right where he was. And his whole personality changed. He became delightful. He became playful. He became affectionate. Just because I was present. You know, it's like he was like, oh, I've been waiting a long time for that, Mom. You know. So before we go any further, I thought it would be nice to just have you pair up with somebody that you don't know for a minute. And I have a couple of questions I thought I would ask you that might get you started on just sharing a little bit. But also, if other things have come up, just share what you like. So find a partner and then wait just a sec when you've got that partner. Just find a way to sit facing them if you can. If you need to be three, that's fine, but two is good.